And good afternoon. Welcome to Angel Answers with yours truly, Amy Toy. It is an honor and privilege to be here today. We have a lot of material. We've had some hard-hitting shows, and this week we have two archangels we're going to talk about. Once, two were mortal men at one time. We're going to talk about their origins, how they can help us in our daily lives, as it's what the purpose of the show is. In the upcoming weeks, we have some great guests coming forward. Next week, we have Andrea S., the Critter Doc. She's coming on as an animal psychic, and I'm very honored to have her. So she'll be on next Monday, the 14th. And then the Monday after that, the 21st, we have a friend of mine who was a former addictions counselor, and she's going to come on and explain what addictions are. If you have a problem or if you know someone who needs help, she will be on the show on the 21st, and I believe the following week is Memorial Day. And I think I'm not going to be around that week. I have something going on. Then the following week, June 4th, I believe we're going to have the Archangel of the Month. And then on the 11th, we have a guest coming in about myofascial healing. So we've got some shows coming up here that are going to be interesting and informative. But today it's just me. And like I said, we're going to talk about the different two archangels. I wanted to lump it together. There's a lot of material. I hope I can get through to it today. We had a good response about the codependent show. Maybe we'll do another show on that in the future. I haven't decided yet. So we've got some guests coming on, too. So I'm booking guests, and dates haven't been firmed up yet, but I do have a couple authors, Hay House authors, that are coming on, and we're just going to get some dates firmed up. So today we're going to talk about two archangels who I've used one. The one that I'm going to talk about first, I've used more extensively than the other one. But as I'm reading the other one, I'm thinking maybe I should look into this archangel some more. The first one is Archangel Metatron. Now, Metatron was definitely one of the two men that were turned into archangels. Now, Metatron is a younger angel than the since he came after the original archangels were created. And Metatron, I use this guy when I first started to open up psychically again many years ago, and I used Archangel Metatron to ground me. Now, grounding is something that people who are kind of, you know, opening up, you may feel a little lightheaded. It's like, oh, I've been eating, but I'm not feeling well. Grounding is where your etheric or your spiritual body is not in, you know, attached to your physical body. You're not in this realm. And sometimes people say, well, go hug a tree or something like that, which is great. But Metatron is something like a tuning fork, you know. When I call an Archangel Metatron, I feel like a vibration. I feel like I've been, like, the earth's moving, like I have an earthquake underneath me. And there was a simple prayer that I was taught, Archangel Metatron, ground my energy from Mother Earth to Father Sky, Mother Earth to Father Sky, Mother Earth to Father Sky. Now, as I'm saying that prayer, I feel like my body's like, you know, so must not be my etheric or my psychic body or spiritual body must not be in attached to my physical body. So I guess I needed to say that. So like I said, it's Archangel Metatron, ground my energy from Mother Earth to Father Sky, Mother Earth to Father Sky, Mother Earth to Father Sky. And that's a good prayer to keep in mind when you're not feeling, like I said, if you're feeling a little bit lightheaded or dizzy, that prayer does help you. Now, Metatron's name, it's not like the EL, which is of with, you know, a messenger of God or of God. The EL, we have Michael, Uriel, Ariel, Raphael, is of God. Not Metatron. He was from the prophet, in the early book of Genesis, Enoch. Now, he, like, I think it's in Genesis 5, chapter 5, where he walked with God. So Enoch was taken from God. He wasn't, his body did not turn to dust or ash. He was taken from God. So Metatron understands what it's like to be human. And Metatron's purpose is very, very interesting. He's talked about a lot in the book of Raziel, and I haven't really looked at that book yet, so forgive me. I'm going to look into that when we do the show on Raziel. But Metatron is a very fiery angel. He likes to help people, especially with those, which would make sense with the etheric body, with, you know, children that are with ADHD or, you know, ADD, and also helps with children with, you know, developmental disabilities. I forgot about this. Like I said, I was doing a lot of research on these guys over the weekend, and Metatron can help you with if you have a child that, you know, I have a stepdaughter that's autistic, so I'm like looking over this little incantation that I found, and I'm thinking, I'm going to use that with my stepdaughter. But also, Metatron is used for record keeping and organization, the Akashic Records. It's rumored that he keeps the Akashic Records and or the Book of Life. And also writing, if you are a writer and you have writer's block, like sometimes I do, you can call in Archangel Metatron to help, you know, ground you in that. So Metatron is a very good archangel to use. Like I said, he's the youngest of the archangels. So Archangel Metatron, ground my energy from Mother Earth to Father Sky, Mother Earth to Father Sky, Mother Earth to Father Sky. And we will be taking messages if you like. I forgot about that. We will be taking. I will be taking messages if you want to call into the show. And I'm going to give you some phone numbers. The 1-800 number to start calling from the U.S. or Canada is 1-888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008. And outside the U.S. and Canada, it's area code 530-413-4522. And I'll be happy to hear from you and take your, you know, any messages that you want to hear from the angels. They're ready and able to hear from you. They would love to give you a message today. But anyway, we're going to, you know, Metatron is one of those angels that, like I said, helps with the vibrational frequency of grounding. Some people like to use Metatron. I personally like to use him on a pinch, when, especially if I'm feeling a little bit out of it. So that's Metatron's story. He's a wonderful archangel if you want to use, you know, someone. He's also, I believe, of the Kabbalah. And if you're into the Kabbalistic ways, he's used a lot in the Jewish tradition. So he's got a lot of uses, and I believe that he's a really good angel, archangel to work with, and he does help anyone who's, any of the angels, archangels, that you call upon can help you in a time of need. But like I said, it's my duty and my honor to help you with figuring out which archangel you can use with what. So that's Archangel Metatron. The next one is Sanphalon. Now, Sanphalon I don't use too much. He is from the prophet Elijah, and I'm going to read a passage to you about how Elijah was taken to heaven, and this is 2 Kings 2. And like I said, it's interesting because this is how Elijah was taken to heaven, like Enoch was just taken by God, so was Elijah. And this is from 2 Kings 2:11. As they were walking along and talking, he's talking with his successor, Elisha, and he's saying, suddenly a chariot of fire appeared, drawn by horses of fire. It drove between them, separating them, and Elijah was carried by a whirlwind into heaven. Elisha saw it and cried out, my father, the chariots and the charioteers of Israel. And as they disappeared from sight, Elisha tore his robe into two. So it's basically Elijah and Elisha were talking, and this chariot came up and took Elijah to heaven. And he became Sanphalon. And I don't know if I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, because sometimes I don't pronounce things correctly. And Sanphalon is an angel of, like I said, one of the two archangels that were human, that became archangels. And they liken, the research that I did, they liken Metatron and Sanphalon as twins. And so they're both, you know, twin angels, probably because they were both from the earth and human. So Sanphalon's chief role here is to carry prayers to heaven. And, you know, Sanphalon is a very nice angel to, you know, pray to. And Sanphalon also can help with unborn children if you want to know the gender of a child. So Sanphalon, and it's also believed that He's the guardian and of the celestial beings of light, or the archangels. So he manages the angels. So he's got a lot of duties. And he does understand where we're coming from. And it's also, from also the research, it also to help us to ascend, you know, those ascended masters we talk about, you know, the ascended masters like Jesus and so on, kind of help you to ascend if you want to do that in this lifetime. So Sanfilan is, you know, the messenger angel, can help with, uses music to either cleanse the environment too, or if you're listening, if you need a message from heaven, listen to the music that you're listening to on the radio and you might be on answered prayer there. So Sanfilan and Metatron are very good angels to talk with. And like I said, maybe we have enough material that I can go back into the codependent situation that that we were talking about last week. And like I said, I am taking calls today, so if you have any messages, I am here. I'm starting to take calls now, and we can go from there. But like I said, when we go into the Bible, going back to Sanfilan's origins, the prophet Elijah, which was taken by a chariot. And the Elijah was a very, very important prophet, as he, you know, he defended years in the book, the older books of the Bible, the prophetic books. He defended against the worship of Yahweh, and he raised the dead. And he, you know, I believe in the New Testament, I don't remember. It's been a long time. But John the Baptizer and Jesus were both compared with Elijah many times. And so, like I said, there are two archangels that I wanted to lump together because of, you know, their origins together. So Metatron's good, like I said, for grounding, and Sanfilan is really good for sending prayers to heaven back and forth. And if you need an answered prayer, call on Sanfilan, and they can help you. He can help you with that. So those are my two archangels of the month. So if you're kind of working with grounding and meditation, that's Metatron, and Sanfilan is messengers to heaven. So I'm going to get back into, I thought I'd have more material on those archangels, but as with, we're going to talk about codependency again, and I'm going to finish up what I was talking about last week about how to recover from codependency. And last week when we talked about codependency, we talked about how it does, you know, you can recover from it, and it's when usually when codependency is not really putting yourself first, it's putting yourself last, and that you become obsessed with either an addictive personality or someone who is mentally ill. You have to control the uncontrollable. It's an illusion, and that's what control is. It is an illusion. And we talked about last week, Codependent No More, How to Stop Controlling Others and Start Caring for Yourself by Melody Beatty. And the book, I wanted to kind of get back into that because we got into some meat, and I'm going to talk about recovering from codependency. And she does have some, if you want to know more, really read the book, but I'm going to give you some pointers on how I recovered from it, because it does affect your life. And when you're aware of codependency, you can kind of become aware of the characteristics, as we described last week. And some codependents will use the addict as an excuse for, let's say the addict is always having you call into work or making excuses for them and not really listening to what's, you know, what you need to do for yourself and care and on taking care of yourself. And now taking care of yourself means giving yourself more consideration than what you have been given. And I feel with codependency, and I'm reading more and more and doing research, I needed a refresher course, because getting involved with unhealthy patterns and families, you need to kind of separate yourself from the chaos and the dysfunction and be in your own energy. And once you start putting yourself first, and I'm not saying you shouldn't love your neighbors as yourself. Now, Jesus said that, love your neighbors as yourself. And when that happens, that doesn't mean that we have to put up with unacceptable abuse or behaviors. People who are nasty to us or abusive to us doesn't mean that we have to put up with that. You know, you, in a way, it's almost sad because when our family members are the ones who are unhealthy, or maybe a close friend who was one time, you know, a healthy friend, or they're just not into, you know, they're just, their growth potential down. It really, they are stopped growing. It's almost like, and you continue to move forward, and they're not, and maybe their behaviors are unhealthy because they have decided to stop growing personally. You need to decide what you need to do, and that means taking care of yourself because no one else is going to. And that's what people of codependence find out, that all the stuff that they were told that they were, you know, they're the fault, their problem, it's their fault, it's everything. You know, it's all their fault that this person's drinking, or it's all their fault that they're unhealthy, or they're taking the blame and they're listening to all the negative messages. They need to kind of separate themselves, and it's hard to do. I mean, that's like a detox process, as I talked about last week. And that's why these self-help groups, you know, like Al-Anon or Codependence Anonymous, or any other caregivers, or not even caregivers, are taken into account with that. You know, they maybe have a sick spouse or a sick, you know, friend or a sick family member that you have to take care of, or a parent. A lot of parents are getting older, and as we get into the new millennium here, there's going to be more geriatrics patients and more geriatrics, older population, because people are deciding to have kids at a later date or deciding not to have children at all. You're going to have an older, elderly population. And a lot of that caregiving is left to the kids, you know, the children, if they choose to. And that's a burden on the kids. You know, their parents are getting older. People are living longer these days. And you have these variables here. So with caregiving and, you know, addiction, which is becoming the forefront, we'll be talking about that on the May 21st show. There's, you know, you have to recover from that, or, you know, break that pattern, and it's okay for you. It's really okay for you not to have to put up with that. Well, they call it in the 12-step programs unacceptable behavior. What's an unacceptable behavior? It's those who are abusing you, whether verbally, emotionally, mentally, or even physically. And it's those people who are very nasty, demeaning, and cruel. And when we have a family member like that, or a person, maybe we have a parent like that, and, you know, we're taught that we should love our parents and be there for them, but it doesn't mean as they should be disrespectful to us and cause any problems to us and cause pain and heartache to us. So you have all these variables as we're getting into this new generation of millennium. You know, we have all these codependent behaviors, and yes, there's every support group out there, my God. You know, like I said, with my father being, you know, with congestive heart failure, there's a support group for that. You know, people, you know, congestive heart failure patients and people who caregivers taking care of them. And there is support out there, and there's really how to set up set up your line in the sand. And I know with some illnesses, people can, you know, it's a painful situation. And I witnessed with my dad, you know, he's been through hell and back with this thing, and he's getting better, thank God. But he still, you know, he gets in his moods. And with the congestive heart failure, I'm reading that there's mood swings, and, you know, he gets tired more easily. Yeah, because it's 70% of his heart's only running, capacity of his heart's running, of course. And, you know, he's been through hell. And so he gets in his moods, and then, but as me, as his daughter, I have to back away sometimes and say, look, you know, you can't treat me like that. Or if he gets a little demanding, to my mother, too, she's been telling him lately, you know, hey, who's taking care of you, buddy? And she has. She's taken a lot of the caregiving duties, you know, for my dad, and thank God she is there for him. And so you have these, you know, you know, difficulties, and people don't, you know, get where codependency is. It's like some people think you know, it's a bad situation. It's really sad, but it is what it is. So here's some ways you can overcome or decide with codependency. Stop rescuing others. What do we mean by that? Take the response. Let the person with the problem take the responsibility. It's difficult. It is very difficult, but they need to take responsibility. You can't, if with the addict, you can't be making excuses for them. They got a problem. They got to deal with it. You know? And I also get that people don't understand how to detach with love. Does that mean when we detach? Now, detachment means to kind of step back and give it, you know, some time here away from the person. And I'm not talking about you detach from the situation, meaning you live your own life, and that's a hard road to hoe. And there's some great books that I have discovered throughout my years in recovery, and recently there was a really good book, and it's from Karen Casey. And it's kind of 12-step-ish, but that's okay. It is Let Go Now, Embracing Detachment, and it's like, I don't know how many, I've been going through this every day. It's like a little exercise every day, and like there's like a lot of exercises and how to change these patterns, and it is really cool because she's got 200, and she talks about how to live your own life and allow people to take their own consequences, because if you don't allow someone to take their own consequences for their actions, you're kind of getting away with their lesson. Maybe they have a lesson that if they're drinking so much or they're being nasty or verbally abusive, and you just keep taking that abuse, or you just keep allowing them to drink and not take the, you know, if they maybe drink and drive, let's say, and they're pulled over by the cops, you know, the DWI laws have been really really hunkered down the past 10, 15 years because with Mothers Against Drunk Driving and then, which is very good. And if you don't allow them to be pulled over by the cops and not, sometimes, you know, you can only do so much by trying to take their keys away or without being confrontational. There's only so much you can do. Maybe they need to be pulled away, you know, pulled over by the cops, and maybe they need a treatment program. Maybe that's what they need. Maybe a judge will say, "Hey, you got to go to a 12-step program, such as AA, or Woman for Sobriety, or Narcotics Anonymous, or Smart Recovery, or SOS." They got so many out there these days. That maybe that's what they need. But sometimes people don't learn, especially like I said, when we talk about on May 21st on the addiction part of this show, you know, we'll talk about that. So detach doesn't mean that if they're passed out drunk or if they're, you know, if they need help with something, you just don't leave. If they're passed out on the living room floor, doesn't mean that, you know, you can leave them. And it's like some people think it's being so cold, and it's really not. It's about allowing their consequences for their actions. And you know what? If it means that that person's got to wake up in a bed of somebody else, let them do it. It's not, doesn't mean you need to go and rescue them all the time. And that's what some codependents do. They rescue. And then they wonder why the person's becoming very resentful, because maybe they need to learn a lesson. We're here to all learn lessons. We're not here to take a lesson away from someone. And as codependents, we want to help people. We're very loving people. We love them. We want them to not suffer. And what are we doing? We're the ones who are suffering from things. And that's the sad part. We don't want to suffer. We want people to be happy just as we are. But it doesn't mean that they need to be abusive towards us in any way. And if they are, especially physically abusive, then we really need to look at that. But codependents really become excessively worried or preoccupied with the problem of the person. You know, they got mentally, their energy is attached, or, you know, they're trying to control the environment, and instead they're reacting to everything, and they're very volatile. and they're, you know, they're just really, really unhealthy. So codependents really need to focus on themselves, detach with love, and that's a very hard thing to do. Sometimes we have to allow people to suffer the consequences of their own actions. Of course, like I said, they're drunk driving. If you can, grab the keys, but if not, they're going to be, you know, pulled over by the cops. And maybe that's their lesson. And that's not good. And can't always be, you know, making excuses for people when they're really, they need to be accountable for themselves. And I said, it's love your neighbor as yourself. Would you want to be subjected, would you subject yourself to the abuse that you're being subjected to? And that's where self-worth and self-esteem come in. And, you know, codependents, you know, are very, very, the end of the world. They're drama queens, some of them. It's the end of the world as they know it. Oh, my God, Joe ran out and, you know, he got a DWI and look at all, you know, it's like, it's, people react to that and it's like, oh, my God, and they react with fear and anxiety and it's not good. And whatever feeling comes into play, they react because it's the end of the world. And sometimes you can't react like that. You have to really think about things and really, really think about it. And sometimes we take things so seriously. I remember when I was growing up, it took me a long time, a really long time. My mom, one time I spilled milk, and oh, my God, it was the end of the world. You know, you think that it was I had committed murder or something. I had an accident, and it took me such a long time to not. I used to say, oh, my God, I'm so sorry I did that when I was growing up. And people were like, what are you sorry for? It's not your fault that, you know, this happened. Or blaming yourself way too much here. Come on, get over it. And that's what happens with us codependents, or those who are used to be codependent. You know, the world is an unpleasant place. And, you know, feelings are feelings, but you don't have to react to every flippant feeling that you have. Feelings aren't facts, and they're just... let them pass. Feel the feelings, but let them pass. And that's very important to remember. Let them pass. And sometimes codependents, too, if somebody is in a bad mood, they take it upon themselves. They're overly responsible for that. That's unhealthy, too. What will happen is the codependent will go in there and, for whatever reason, will take it really, really, really personally if somebody's in a bad mood. It must be something I did. Well, what did I do? Well, you know what? Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's not you at all. And what will happen is, you know, they'll start thinking that they have to walk on, you know, pins and needles or walk on eggshells. That is very exhausting and very tiring. And what will happen is, you know, you'll react to every little thing. It's like you're on hyper mode, hyperactive mode, you know, hyper alert. And that's something that's not really healthy. A lot of times it has nothing to do with you. I have people calling me up on the lines all the time. He's in a bad mood. Is it because of me? No. Did you talk to him in the past 24 hours, 48 hours? No. It has nothing to do with you. You know, and the codependent will sometimes, you know, try to overcompensate. What I mean by overcompensate, are you doing okay? Is there anything I can do? Maybe that person wants to be left alone for 5 minutes. You know, maybe that person doesn't want to... You're making it worse. Then you are the problem because maybe that person's in a bad mood because of their work schedule or what happened at work. And, you know, you think it's all about you, and you're trying to overcompensate for them. It's like, come on already, you know? It's not all about you. Maybe it's, and it doesn't have, the world does not have to, because you're breathing. You know, and I think a lot of codependents, especially if they've been brought up in a very, very dysfunctional household, will do that, you know, and then they take it, their self-worth goes down the drain because they are taking it personally. And that's one thing that I've learned, too, that I've taken things way too personally. And I'm telling you the lessons that I've learned through all this. And I used to think that if my dad came into a bad mood, you know, from work or something, it was all my fault. And because that's what I was told growing up, it was my fault that a lot of these things happened, you know, and... When I told the therapist this years ago, I mean years ago, they're looking at me like, no, it's not your fault, it's your father's fault. Because, you know, I could have asked him a question when he walked in the door that day, and he could have jumped down my throat, which is what my father usually did. And it took me years to undo that pattern within myself and not look at it. It was me, it was him. And it was, it has nothing to do with you. We take things way too personally. And we overcompensate because we are good people. You know, the codependent is a really good person. We want to be really good people. We love people. We see their pain. And I sometimes think that codependents are empathic, are very empathic. They have a lot of feeling to them. And I really feel like because they are very feeling people, they take things way too personally. And it's something that, you know, you when you open up psychically like I did, it took me a long time to learn those boundaries. And boundaries are really important this past couple weeks. I don't know what's in the atmosphere. I do astrology, but I don't. It all depends. I was looking, a lot of people were talking to me about boundaries and how they're affected, you know, this boundary lesson. My God, I felt this when I was 12 years old, and now this is coming up at 35, you know. Boundaries are very important because when you're opening up psychically, especially empathically, and like I said, in the codependent way, you've got to separate what's yours and yours and what's his is his or his or hers. You want to keep that separate, and you don't want to keep it really personally because it does happen, and it really is hard to do that. So there's some ways you can help yourself not to react to maybe problems is, you know, learn your feelings, self-awareness. I mean, I know a lot of people who are not even self-aware why they react to what they react. Journaling helps this, talking to someone. You know, over the weekend something was really bothering me, and I called a friend and talked it out, and we figured it out. But in my old days, there would be no way I could separate what was mine and what wasn't. And it took me a long time, so you have to really figure out why are you reacting that way. What is inside of you? Which it always comes down to you. Doesn't matter what it is. It comes down to you. Why are you feeling that way? And why are you reacting the way you are? So really recognize why you're reacting. And if you're feeling afraid, okay. If you're feeling indignant, why is that? Like I said, it had to do with boundaries in my case. Boundaries of, you know, I was allowing some people to take advantage of me. And I was really mad at myself more than anything. And I went off on a friend, and I felt bad because this poor friend's like, Amy, are you okay? I'm like, no, I'm not. And it comes down to why. You know, why are you reacting? What are you feeling inside? It could be fear. Fear is false evidence appearing real or false emotion appearing real. It appears real at the time. And then you're like, oh, man, I'm not feeling, you know. Really feel your feelings, too, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but really go into the root cause of that. And then if you're feeling uncomfortable, make yourself comfortable. You know, switch gears. If you're obsessing about a problem or you're obsessing about something, kind of switch your activities. And that's not, once again, that takes a lot of training, lots of training. And I used to think with my dad, for example, if he came home in a bad mood, and I didn't know why he was in a bad mood, I really, really, really would just kind of, after a while, sit with my emotions because I would react and I'd yell back at him or I'd swear at him or I'd tell him to go, you know, what to himself or whatever. That's what I used to do with my dad. But learning not to react to that and just really allowing things to be, just sitting with myself and changing, go for a walk, I would, you know, after a while, I left the house. I went for a lot of drives when I lived at home. That's when my cars died after so many years because after so much mileage because I would be driving all around and I'd just disappear for an afternoon. Or I would clean my room. For me, I was really empathic, so I had to leave the situation. I had to get out of there. And sometimes that's what you got to do, make yourself comfortable. Whether that be, like I said, you know, not reacting, that's the first thing, figuring out what self-awareness is. And you'd be a lot surprised at a lot of people who think they're really self-aware and they're not. And they didn't blame you for stuff. It's like, look at yourself. But really make yourself comfortable. Do some brain switching. You know, go somewhere. Talk to a friend. I mean, just get out of yourself. And then, after a while, examine what happened. Now, like I said, I've discussed this before. I'm a reactor. And I have anger issues, which is something that, you know, I'm working on. sometimes I have to sit with it 24 to 48 hours before I do anything. And my main priority right now in my life is to protect myself from any further damage, because I've worked very hard to work on myself, and if there's unhealthy behaviors or healthy parties around me, I'm not going to put up with that. So I protect myself. So sometimes I'll examine the incident and get to the bottom of it before I make a decision. And sometimes I'll just decide is also a decision to make. You know, I decide not to do anything at the moment because, for whatever reason, I do have a sharp tongue and a sharp way about me, and I will rip you apart, and it's not good. So I'll kind of take a step back. And the final thing is to figure out how to take care of yourself. And now, taking care of yourself, there's many ways you can take care of yourself. It's whatever makes you feel comfortable. Like, go for a drive. If you can afford it, get a massage. Go to the store and go shopping, or walk the mall, or do a physical activity. Sometimes that helps me just to get out of myself. Talk to a friend, call up a friend to figure out what the issue is with you. There's many different things, but taking care of you is the main priority. And if you're in a very toxic situation, extricate yourself immediately, because words can really harm that person. If you get into a physical altercation, that's not healthy either. Remove yourself from the situation. Assess the situation. I remember a long time ago, me and my fiancé and I had a really big fight about something. He didn't tell me something right away that I thought was important, which it was. And I was so angry, I had to leave the house, and I was going to react. I was ready to kill him. And I had to literally go to a movie. And, you know, I called a friend. I couldn't get a hold of a couple of my friends because I was, you know, calling them on the phone, dialing. Nobody was around. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to go to a movie. And that's what I did, and I felt a lot better. And that was the first time, I think, in a long time that I really had to get out of the environment and the situation. So make yourself comfortable. And it does help, or like I said, some people like Al-Anon meetings. Go to an Al-Anon meeting. It does help. It does. You're just beginning the recovery process, and you're aware you're codependent or in an unhealthy situation. It does, you know, it is what it is. And when you do these things, you're setting yourself free. You're setting yourself free from unhealthy behaviors. And what I mean by that is sometimes the codependent manipulates, hollers, you know, cries, bribes, coerces, accuses, chases. I mean, we do crazy things, and then we appear to be the crazy one. And the person with the problem's like, yeah, right, you think I'm crazy. Look at her or look at him. He's the one chasing me down the street with the, you know. I heard a story in the family that one of my relatives got mad, and they were raising their daughter, and she said that she got so mad at this, you know, teenagers, you know, they're hormonal, and they have mouths on them and everything, and she told the teenager, you know, I want you to peel potatoes or whatever, so she refused to do it, and the mother, you know, and her daughter, these relatives of mine, the daughter's growing down the street, and this relative of mine is throwing potatoes at her down the street. It was really funny. And she's like, I appear to be the crazy one. I'm like, yeah, you are, just a little bit. So, you know, when we don't do these things, the teenager's being an idiot. It is kind of like, I have stepchildren that are going to be teenagers very soon, this especially one this year. It's going to be interesting. So back away as much as you can. The less involved you are, the better off you be. That's called detachment. And sometimes we have to just kind of turn them over, and, you know, the person's acting like a fool, you know, and they're expecting you, it's changing reactions to them. This is a funny, and just, you know, if that relative of mine had just said, okay, you know, whatever, you can, you don't want to go there, that's fine. I, you know, instead of throwing potatoes while they were running down the street, that would have been okay too, or sent that person to their room. But I know this relative's daughter, and she's very stubborn and bullheaded. So I don't think that would have worked. But sometimes you're at your wit's end, especially with teenagers. They do want to drive you to drink something alcoholic. So But you don't want to be up here, you know, because the more you react to the person is what I'm saying, say the codependent, the more, you know, this person's going to think you're crazy and put the blame on you. And we want to take personal responsibility for our stuff, not their stuff. And sometimes it doesn't matter what's going on. And the truth, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And that's very important. Like I said, I'm going to be taking calls, and the phone number's here. Let me pull them up again. I'm all disorganized. I cleaned my office, and I have no clue where anything is. The phone number's for the U.S. and Canada. If you'd like an angel message, we're going to talk to the angels today. 1-888-627-6008. And outside the U.S. and Canada, it's area code 530-413-4522. So anyway, while we're waiting, if anyone wants to call me, I'm going to continue the last 10, 15 minutes on codependency. There's an old saying in the 12 steps. There's no victims. There's only volunteers. And what does that mean? People make themselves out to be the victim. And I've witnessed this myself, being in 12-step groups, especially Al-Anon. You find out that people are the victim or the martyr. There's archetypes, and maybe we should do a show on that, archetypes. Carl Jung had talked about the archetypal traditions, but the martyr and the victim. Now, the victim plays, oh, they did this to me. Oh. I had a person that I used to be associated with, and she would try to help people out, okay? She was the typical people pleaser and tried to gain approval by doing that. And what would happen is she would be so generous, which was great, and I commended her for her generosity, but I think it was just to make herself look good. And then she played the victim that the person didn't, or the parties involved didn't kind of go along with what she wanted them to do. Oh, look at what I've done for them, you know, and, you know, that's a martyr too, but, you know, she would give up so much of herself in order to kind of rescue these people. And the one time she, like, had all these people, I don't know, you know, some were staying with her, some were, she was helping out financially, and she'd come and say, you know, look at all the stuff I did for them, and they don't want to do it for themselves. Well, yeah, because you're making it easy for them, you're enabling them, you know, and I just sit there and I'd shake my head and I'd be like, you know, because you're not allowing people to be who they are, the consequences. Not allowing the people to follow through their own consequences, and then she'd play the victim. But at the same time, she would also play the martyr. And so that's what I mean, you know, we can only take care of ourselves. And then that's what I would put on her, and I'd say, you know, you can only take care of yourself. And she'd be mad at me. And, you know, people pleasers do it because they want approval, because they don't want it. They can't go within themselves and get it from themselves. They choose not to. It doesn't work that way. I mean, people need to remove the victim stance here. Like I said, there's no victims. There's only volunteers. You volunteered for this position. You volunteered for it. Now you deal with it. You got to deal with the consequences of your own actions. And I would be so infuriated with this person that she wasn't looking at what she needed to look at. And, you know, there's more stuff going, more layers to this person than meets the eye. But, you know, and then what I found out to be quite hysterical is this person would then, you know, put it back on me and say, you know, well, Amy's not doing this, you know, and I gave her this and that, so she started playing that game with me, and I had to put a stop to it. So, you know, there's that victim role that we all deal with. And instead of looking at ourselves, it's always good to blame the external factors and blame other parties. And that's what happens. Sometimes it just happens that way, and we can't always be the savior or the messiah here. You know, people give until it hurts, and it's not good. It's really not. Where do I begin and where do they end? Melody Beattie talks about the Karpman drama triangle, and I looked that up, and it does talk about where do I begin and where do they end. And sometimes with the distorted triangle, there's different parties in your space. If it's none of your business, stay out of it. And that's a good, you know, clue, unless I'm asked. And sometimes I don't like to give my opinion, and I know I do. And I'm a big mouth, and I get up. But if someone's asking me, sometimes I just want to listen. I don't want to give my opinion, and they'll be like, "What do you say?" if it's not your business, stay out of it. Mind your own business. And maybe it's what I need to practice more of, especially with some of my clients. It's none of my business. And the codependent, getting back to the codependency, you know, codependents kind of appear to be fragile creatures that they need rescuing themselves. A lot of times they do. And that's okay. And they're very needy people, or they attract needy people into their lives, these people that need to be saved and rescued and all that crap. Rescue yourself. And that's, you know, like some people, if you're involved, like I said, I'm going back to the addict because that seems to be a prevalent theme. Or maybe, what about the women who attract those guys that have no jobs and they're working 24/7 and, you know, the guy's just drinking beer and watching TV and, you know, treating her badly or whatever. And the women are giving up a lot of themselves. They're giving to it hurts. They really need to look at that and really, you know, the loser mentality. They don't think they can track somebody better that's jobless. And I'm here to tell you, that's not the case. Sometimes if we don't have an equal relationship, that's not good. That means that we're too dependent on them. We just, you know, there's the old adage, women, especially women like this, I've noticed, don't believe they deserve any more than a guy who doesn't have a job or who does drugs or the bad boy mentality. And that's a shame because there are a lot of good guys out there. If you really look, there's really some good guys, and you deserve better than what you're getting. And if the guy doesn't make as much money as you do, because that happens in today's household, the women make more than the guys, but at least the guy's working, and maybe he can compensate by, you know, helping out around the house. And that's what happens. You know, an equal relationship here. Be careful what you ask for, because you'll get it. And if you think you're not worthy of having a guy that is working and employable, then you got some issues. And it's destructive on you. And what if you're the other on the other end of the spectrum? You don't have the job, and you decided to stay home for the kids, and the guy's an alcoholic, or just doesn't treat you well, or is cheating on you, and you're emotionally dependent and monetarily dependent upon him. It's something that you need to look at as well. And maybe you need to go get a part-time job and get some self-esteem. You'll be surprised at how you feel afterwards. Maybe you have to hustle burgers at McDonald's, but maybe that's what you need to do. You know, I know a lot of women who stay at home with the kids, and then the kids grow up, and then they're empty inside because they gave it all away. And I think it's really, I don't have kids myself. I have 4 cat children. Yes, I do. But they're not, I chose not to have kids because part of me doesn't want to give that up. You know, I love what I do. I love my career, and I love doing this radio show. And I don't, once I'm into something, I'm in 150%. And I give women respect and kudos that they can balance a home life, a career life, you know, and being a mom and a wife and a CEO of a company. We can have it all. But there's some women out there that still have the old adage, I have to stay at home with the kids. And that's great. But keep your identity. You know, keep up on yourself. And I think that we just lose ourselves in relationships. And sometimes we have to really look at what we need to look at. So there's a few things we can do if we're stuck in an unequal situation. A lot of times, we have to kind of look at our childhoods, and it sucks going back. It really does. I did it, and it really was it's very painful, and I really think that it takes most of our adulthood to get over our childhood, and it does. It really sucks. It's very painful. But once you look at it, you can let it go, and if something does come up, that's where that self-awareness comes in. Once again, the more work you do on yourself, the more self-aware you are, the better off you're going to be identify something that comes up. Because we can react to old patterns. Like I said, the overreacting, the world is over because of overspilled milk. And that's a real true story. And if we can, you know, look at that and go back to our childhoods and say, why am I repeating the same story? Why am I attracting deadbeat losers in my life? Or why am I attracting alcoholics in my life? Or why am I attracting men who are verbally abusive? Or why am I attracting men that are disrespectful and cheating on me? Look at that. It usually goes back to childhood. And there's some unfinished business there we need to look at. And the work is well worth it. It really is. And I can tell you, it does work if you work it. And it really does help. And there's some inner child work that we need to do. Sometimes we need to go back. And that's what Kathy, when she's on June 11th, will talk about some inner child work. And sometimes we have a little child that's reacting to things. And I had to go back. I really had to go back to different ages when Amy was, you know, 16 or 9 or 7 and 17 or whatever it was. And I'd have to go back and look at that. Now, it may sound stupid, but when you go back and you find out, you go back to the internet, you really work on that. And you're like, oh, that's why I react to the way I do, or that's why things are the way they are. And you can really look at that, and you can see what patterns are being set up in your life. I seem to have a pattern with betrayal of relatives, especially with my one sister. And when I went back to different ages, because she was in charge of taking care of me and some things that I repressed that she had done to me, and nothing sexual or anything, but just mind things, mind games she used to play with me, I had to go back to that. And I really had to look at things and, oh, that's why I can't stand her. Oh, yeah, I remember when she did, you know, she locked me up in a shed one time, and I was like 2 or 3 years old, and I had repressed the memory, and it was a scary, you know, she was playing a joke on me, and her friends were laughing hysterically at me, but I was hysterical myself, because I was only a little kid. I was vulnerable, and I had to look at that, and I had to see what was going on there. So that was, you know, some inner child work stuff does help. You know, and look for happiness within yourself. We make ourselves happy, not anybody else. I mean, why do women get into, you know, guys and women, like, jump from relationship to relationship? Because the high of romantic love is there. And without realizing, you need to make yourself happy. That's taking care of yourself. And taking care of yourself involves looking at yourself. What makes me happy? Well, it ain't Joe down the street, you know, and, you know, giving him whatever every Saturday. What makes you happy? The more you take away from yourself, the more you're not going to gain. And that's the sad part. Depend on ourselves. Sometimes you have to depend on yourself. When you're codependent, you sometimes depend on other people, and that's not a healthy way to be either. It really isn't. It has to deal with depending on yourself. And I'm not talking about Superwoman, too, because there's a balance here. And, you know, I was the opposite of the codependent. I depended on myself too much. And what do I mean by that? You know, I grew up and I could only rely on myself, or so I thought. I was the Superwoman syndrome, you know. It was me that took care of me. I could only depend on me because I was betrayed by, you know, at that time I felt I was being betrayed upon by many people. So I had decided that I was going to depend on myself, you know, and live for me. And I got out of balance there, and I had to reach a point in my own personal recovery that I had to start depending on other people, and that was scary. That left me vulnerable. But that did help with the lessons of allowing other people to take care of me. And it's okay. If someone wants to, I'm not talking about overly taking care of, you know, if someone wants to, you know, do the dishes like my fiancé does, I let him do it. It makes him feel good, and if I fight him on it, he gets mad at me. So that's just some ways to recover from codependency. And it's been a rough road for me. I'm glad I reread the book, Codependent No More, by Melody Beatty, because there's some things I had forgotten about and some things that I probably wanted to forget about. And so, you know, and then her new book, The New Codependency, is about caregiving and so on. And that's a really good book. So if you can pick up those two books, if you really want to know more about the subject, that's, you know, more kudos to you, because that's part of your recovery. Because what are we here to learn and grow as people? And that's important. Well, I'm about to close the show, and you can find me in a couple of different ways if you want to talk to me. The angels are always there. You can call upon them 24/7. Always remember that. And the archangels, too. And Metatron and Sanphalon, they're really good angels, archangels to work with. Like I said, they're very good in a lot of different ways, and I'm here to educate you on how to use them. And they're here to be of service to us, like we're here to be of service to others. So with that, you can find me on my website is angelanswers11.com. You can find me that way. You can schedule a reading if you like. Just contact me. You can email me at angelicamy35@gmail.com. I do have a Facebook account, Angel Answers with Amy. There's a fan page, like me. And now sometimes I post topics, sometimes I don't because some things do change. And you can find me on Twitter, at Angel Answers 11, at Angel Answers 11. Well, like I said, we have some great shows coming up. So I hope you have a great day. It was an honor and privilege to be with you on this Monday. And namaste, and let the angels always be with you. Bye-bye.